For 200 years, the University of Cincinnati has built an art collection as a resource for the community and to connect creativity across generations. Pieces from the university's collection are on display at the Contemporary Arts Center now through April 5th. And the curators of that exhibit have put out a new book called Collecting Art, Reflections on Works at the University of Cincinnati. You're tuned to Cincinnati Edition on WBXU. I'm Lucy May. Joining me in this recorded interview to discuss the exhibit, the book, and the future of the university's art collection are Dean Emeritus of the University of Cincinnati's College of Design, Architecture, Art, and Planning, Robert Probst, UC Provost Emeritus, Christy Nelson, and Director of UC's Art Collection and Galleries, Aaron Cowan. Thanks so much for being here. Christy, tell us about Herman Schneider, the founder of UC's co-op program at UC. I know his idea was to mix classroom learning with hands-on learning. How did he set the university's art collection on a more purposeful direction?
Herman Schneider was a very interesting figure and really very important to the history of the University of Cincinnati. As most people know, they associate the development of co-op, which originated at the University of Cincinnati with Herman Schneider. But he was also very interested in art. And he thought students, his engineering students, should like art, should be acquainted with art, and actually even take drawing lessons, so to speak. And he really set up the practice of engineering classes, purchasing or raising funds to give works to the University of Cincinnati, the College of Engineering and or the University of Cincinnati when they graduated. And so he really is in some ways a very important stimulus for the development and creation of the university's art collection.
So interesting. Aaron, what role have students played historically in UC's art acquisition?
There were students and student organizations that would raise funds, that would commission artists to paint works. They were practicing artists at the time. In hindsight, they were made some really great selections because many of those artists have become pretty significant artists regionally and nationally, and some of them internationally. And the students would probably the best example is the Jamming Barges piece, which is the documentation of the Roebling Bridge. It was done, I think, probably about 40 plus years, 45 years after the building of the bridge. But the engineering students decided that they wanted to purchase a piece of art, but also document some engineering history in the process.
That's great. And that piece is on display at the CAC, right?
Yes, it is.
Robert, how large is UC's art collection today?
We have about 5,000 pieces in the art collection.
Wow, 5,000 pieces.
Yes. I just want to say also, Herman Schneider encouraged the students to raise money to purchase art pieces to decorate the hallways of UC, because he thought art would inspire the engineering students as well as all of the students and faculty. So that was a long tradition at the university for the students to do that. That's how the art collection started and grew now to 5,000 pieces altogether.
Christy, this collection has so many notable local artists, and I want to talk to you about some of them. Let's start with some of the female artists in the collection. There's Elizabeth Norse, who's focused on domestic life, and there seem to be these clear comparisons of her work to Mary Cassatt. Can you talk about that?
Elizabeth Norse and Mary Cassatt, both very well-known women artists and actually well-known in their lifetime, which wasn't always the case. They both spent time in France, also focused a lot on what we would call genre subjects, scenes of everyday life, often mothers and children, were very talented artists, you know, often compared with some of those late 19th century male French artists, but they were very strong artists in their own right and had their own individual styles. And I think we're very fortunate to have so many works by each of those artists in our collection. We're very proud of that.
Well, Robert, there are also notable contemporary local artists, there, including sculptor and UC professor Pat Rennick. Her series Lifeboats really reflects on her hospitalizations in the 1950s. Robert, can you tell us more about her experience and how the lifeboats came to be displayed at DAP? Because didn't her partner plan to bury them after her death?
Yes, her partner planted a funeral. Actually, after Pat passed away, and she sent out an invitation to have a funeral for the for the boats. I knew Pat very well. We had many discussions about anything, life and art, in our hallways. And when I saw the invitation to the funeral, it just made me so sad, because those boats are marvelous sculptures. So immediately I called her and I said, we can't bury these boats. And she said, what would you like to do with them instead? I already sent out these invitations. And I said, well, we need to hang them in the atrium of DAP. That is where I had great discussions with Pat, and her spirit is in there. And she started to cry on the telephone and said, but how do we facilitate that? We have to ask permission. And I said, well, I'm the dean of the college. I give you permission to hang the boats. So that's how it came about. And once the boats were in the atrium, everybody thought it was the perfect space. The atrium was built for these boats.
Yeah. Well, I mentioned, and you mentioned in the book, that these boats really reflected some of the time she spent hospitalized. Can you right. tell us a little bit about that backstory?
Well, she had a very difficult upbringing. Her mental condition at the time was not properly diagnosed. So she moved from facility to facility, and sometimes they even treated her with electroshocks. Mm. And she was in a horrible condition until, I guess, she was an adult and escaped the medical environment. And I think art, in a way, healed her. She was a wonderful professor, great sculptor, yeah. and a good friend.
And how do you think those lifeboats really capture that experience?
Well, I think for the general public, it might be mysterious to look at these boats, but I think that is also why she did them. She wanted the public to look at these boats and think about what it could be. Because a lot of boats have small boats in their tummy. And some boats have like masks in the tummy. Some boats have some medical equipment built in. So it's a series of, it's an evolution of her life, really.
They become like self-portraits,
yes.
in a way, which document her life. And of course, the metaphor of a boat in terms of traveling or passing through time or passage of one's life. Right. And it's actually a very, I think, a very beautiful tribute to not only her life, but her work, and expressed in a very creative kind of way through the metaphor of a boat.
And those boats were originally shown at the old Contemporary Art Center. Yes.
When my wife and I moved to Cincinnati in 1978, the first art exhibit we visited was in the Contemporary Art Center, the old Contemporary Art Center. And those boats were on display there.
Wow.
So those boats were kind of the first art pieces we experienced in Cincinnati. Oh,
what a beautiful introduction to the city.
Yeah.
There are other notable contemporary artists in the collection, including Stuart Goldman, Terrence Corbin, Derek Woodham, Tom Shaw, Gary Gaffney. Robert, can you tell us briefly about their work and also your friendship with Derek Woodham?
All of these people were my colleagues. We were sitting together every week, you know, in faculty meetings. I know them as artists as well as colleagues. And I always admired their work, all of them. And the newest one was Joe Girondola. He's the president of the Art Academy right now. And Derek passed away recently. We thought we need to honor our friends right now and put them on display too, because a lot of them have not only local, but regional and national, even international presence.
Well, I want to step back in time a little bit, and some of the most recognizable local artists from the past are Hiram Powers and Robert Duncanson. Can you add anything to that, Christy?
Well, I was just going to add about the Hiram Powers, Judge Jacob Burnett, which is really a very, very impressive piece. And, you know, he spent time here in Cincinnati and then went to Florence and did most of his work in Florence and actually made the work in Florence and had it sent back to Cincinnati. But he was very well known in his lifetime and really set a trend here in Cincinnati for artists to make sculpture. And there's a very funny line in the book about how children were going around Cincinnati making little images and three-dimensional figures based on, because of the influence of Hiram Powers. It's just, it sort of demonstrates his, I think, impact and influence on the city. And then we're very fortunate to have the Longworth portrait that Duncanson did, which we exhibit at the Taft Museum right now. But it's a very well-known piece, and we're fortunate that it's in the Cincinnati collection.
Well, there are many portrait busts in the collection. Christy, can you talk about the origin and purpose of the portrait bust and the notable historic figures who are included among these busts?
Yes, I can. The portrait bust has a long history in art. It goes back, basically believe that it developed during the Roman period and had a purpose in terms of being commemorative or funerary or memorial, or even to document the lineage of family history. It was really a tribute to an individual and serves as a lasting memorial, visual image of a particular image. So it was really in the Roman period when the portrait bust developed. They had a particular way of doing it, which has lasted up through, even through contemporary busts are still made in the Roman fashion. Developed through the Renaissance, there are many famous Renaissance artists such as Donatello, just one example, who made portrait busts, Bernini in the 17th century. And in a sense, the form of the portrait bust has lasted and endured because of how it honors a particular individual. And when you look at a portrait bust, some of the things one might want to pay attention to is the turn of the head, how it engages with the individual, hairstyles. Sometimes females were wrapped in drapery with beautiful details in terms of the buttons or the collars. So it was certainly about the image and the face, but it was also the sort of aura and presence it creates and how a spectator interacts with it in a three-dimensional kind of way.
We're talking in this recorded interview about the University of Cincinnati's art collection and future plans for the collection. I know one of the primary purposes of much of this collection is to serve as a teaching tool. Aaron, how are antiquities used in the classroom at UC?
Well, the antiquities are used in a number of ways. It's also the antiquities are actually used for outreach. There's a program that the archivists that work over in classics put together where they take objects to schools, and some of the sort of less valuable or rare objects, they can even sort of pass around the classroom and really give students, young students, an opportunity to engage with things directly. The older students study many of the objects that are in the collection from antiquities were actually from digs that took place from the university. And so the students, in some cases, and the professors were active on those digs. And with the permission of the governments that they were working with, some of those objects were brought back, and they're used as examples of different styles, techniques, periods of time, but also used as an opportunity to discuss the way that practices have transitioned over time as well.
Well, I know the study teaching collections at a lot of universities have become orphaned. What's unique about UC's classics program when it comes to using these antiquities?
Well, I think that part of it is that the classics program, the anthropology program at UC has a great reputation and is one of the oldest active departments in the country. Their relationships go back quite far. And I think that there's a lot of value in that. It gives students and faculty opportunities to do things that that would be difficult to otherwise. I'm sure that you probably saw the news probably a couple years ago with the find of the Warrior.
Griffin Warrior.
The Griffin Warrior, which is a remarkable example of carving and ornamental work. But the classics department is very active and been a really great partner with us.
You have to add that the classics department is world renowned. I have worked with many of our design students in collaboration with classics faculty and students on various exhibits that we've done together. And I just participated in an accreditation review for the classics department with faculty from other institutions. They also affirmed that this is like one of the best programs in the world, really.
Well, Robert, you said earlier that there's 5,000 objects in this collection. Tell us about the massive undertaking of reorganizing the collection and how it's stored, how is it managed, how's it preserved? Did I give you the hardest question, Robert?
No, it's okay. Christy and I have been with the university for a long time. Christy is an art historian. I'm a designer. We both grew up in the College of Design, Architecture, Art, and Planning. We were always both very interested in the art that the university has. And so Christy and I, for a long time, looked at the art collection and cared for the art collection. And when we hired Aaron about 15 years ago now.
So you're the new guy here.
Part of his mission was to really consolidate all of the information that we had in our archives about all of the art. You have to imagine like half of the art collection is distributed in buildings all over the campus. And sometimes we didn't even know what college has what art and where is it located. So Aaron started to really organize all of that information and categorize and catalog everything. About 5 years ago or so, maybe we had the idea of we need to put a publication together. How could we reflect on the art collection in the broadest sense? That is where we started.
And when you say it's distributed across all these buildings all over campus, is it hanging on walls? Isn't there a big storage facility where some of it's contained?
Yeah, we store a lot of the collection at a building on Fishwick Avenue, which the university purchased a few years ago. And there are other activities that go on there. We got university support to actually properly control the air and the heat in this facility. And then through the good work of Aaron and a number of co-op students that have worked with him over the years, they've organized the space and they've got drawings where they need to be, sculpture organized, racks where the paintings are held. They've got a little restoration area, a place to sort of photograph work. So it's organized like a proper museum.
A lot of bigger art pieces, like environmental art pieces that are outside buildings and on buildings, were purchased with the renovation of a building or with the building of a new building. When the university went through a big master plan in the 80s, they hired a lot of signature architects for the buildings, and a portion of the budget always went to art. There was a percentage for art program going. So there are lots of...
It was a state requirement, wasn't it?
Exactly. Mm-hmm.
One of the reasons we really tried to organize the collection, you know, it was in various places and we hired Aaron. And we set up a partnership between the College of Design, Architecture, Art and Planning and our libraries so that the college could work on the sort of curatorial aspects of the collection, but the libraries actually helped us with the documentation and took all of the data and integrated it into the library catalog to make it accessible. And what we were really hoping to do was to make the collection more accessible for students and faculty and even researchers beyond Cincinnati as a way to for us to understand the works in a larger context and also to assist with research in a variety of capacities.
You can now go to our website and search an artist, and it will bring up the works, images of the works, the information, the basic. There are about 7 fields that it provides for you. But that wasn't an option 5 years ago.
That's wonderful. So, Robert, what's the long-term goal for the collection? Do you think there could be a museum someday? Are you looking to be able to commission work rather than counting on gifts?
Our dream of Christy and Aaron and mine was always to have a museum on campus. The collection has now grown to an amount of pieces that are in storage that need to be shown to the public, I think. that is being discussed. What would be a good facility on campus to maybe have, rather than just, we have two galleries right now, the Myers Gallery and the Reed Gallery on campus, but what would be more of a major space on campus that could potentially be a museum or museum-like or a learning center with art? What would that look like for a contemporary university? We are discussing that as we speak right now, even with the president and with a planning team on campus. As the university grows, that is part of our discussion right now.
And Christy, is the desire to be able to commission work also? I mean, the university's relied on gifts mostly up till this point, right?
Yes, the collection has grown primarily through gifts with very nice benefactors and patrons. We would have to develop resources for that. And perhaps that's a next step as well.
That would be, at least from my perspective, a pretty major thing for us to be able to do. We've been very fortunate, the generosity of donors and artists and classes purchasing artworks. But with that, that leaves some gaps in our collection and areas that it would be, at least from my perspective, it would be very nice to have the ability to purchase artworks so that collections, we have a number of collections within the collection, a really fantastic print collection. We have some really great pottery. We have a tremendous collection of American paintings, but all of those collections kind of have gaps in them, either time-wise or pretty significant figures that aren't represented. And having the ability to make purchases would allow for us to make sort of targeted decisions on how to fill some of those gaps and really fill out some of those collections.
I've been talking with University of Cincinnati Provost Emeritus Christy Nelson, Director of University of Cincinnati's Art Collection and Galleries, Aaron Cowan, and Dean Emeritus of DAP, Robert Probst. Thank you all so much for your time today. A selection of works from the University of Cincinnati Art Collection is on view at the Contemporary Art Center through April 5th, 2026. You can find links with more information about the exhibit and the book, Collecting Art, Reflections on Works at the University of Cincinnati, on WVXU.org. You've been listening to Cincinnati Edition on WVXU. Our producer is Selena Reeder. Associate producer is Harper Carlton. Technical director is Carlos Lopez Cornu. Rob Fetters composed our theme music. I'm Lucy May. Thanks for listening.